Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Full Tank Motorcycle Podcast with me, Rob, from the YouTube channel MotoBob. And as always, I'm joined by Tim of...
Rarified Road, Urban Rider, and MotoBob, actually, as well.
Exactly. You know, spreading yourself thin, but doing a great job at the same time.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah. I try my best.
Yeah, and what's been going down in your realm recently? I don't think we've... We did catch up after the CF Moto trip, didn't we?
We did, yeah. So other than that, just back to the normal grind, looking forward to another possible trip coming up. So we've got the Ducati Scrambler.
Yeah, so that's next week, isn't it? I think I'm out on the Honda CL500 Scrambler launch. So Tim has kindly stepped in to cover the Ducati Scrambler. Two different price points there. I think the Honda will be about half the price of the Ducati Scrambler. So I feel like you've got possibly a slightly better deal there.
Hey, it's just the way that the chips fall, I'm afraid.
Yeah, but will it be half the fun? That is the question, mate. I think I'll probably have a very good time on the CL500. I'm actually, you know, it's one of those situations where you're like, I definitely want to do both of those trips, but...
Yes, no, both possible. Of them. I don't think you're missing out on either, because they're both going to take care of you. Ducati and Honda are going to take care of you on the trip. So, and it really comes down to where you're riding them, what kind of riding you're doing and stuff, right? Because if they stick us on just like some busy Italian roads, then I won't have a very good time at all. I can't see that being the case, but you never know. You might get a nicer experience than me.
Well, I believe it's mainly road riding on the Honda Scrambler launch, but there will be a photo stop where there's a bit of gravel. So it looks like we've done some sliding about in the dirt. But the reality is it's a road bike. Probably the same for the new Ducati Scrambler as well. It looks pretty road biased now.
Yes, I haven't seen much. Obviously, they haven't sent through much yet, but it looks, my guess is it's more road-based and same thing. I don't even know if we're going to get a little gravel stop to show off for photos, but it's fine either way.
Yeah, it's probably not really the sort of number one thing anyone's thinking of doing with the Ducati Scrambler.
No.
Yes, well, that should be good. And I'm just back off the BMW launch that I was on last week. So I've got a week in the office this week. But last week we had a heck of a trip. It was like...
It looked it.
Yeah, it was good. 2 days. First day was riding the R1250R and RS on the road, which was kind of interesting. They're sort of bikes that you wouldn't normally consider. Have you ever ridden either of those?
No, I haven't.
Nah, it's like, I guess the R1250R... Think of the R9T, but fully modern, you know, TFT dash, all the rider aids, heated seats, heated grips, all those kinds of things. But still with that boxer character, naked riding position. So it's quite interesting. I think it's one of those bikes that it's never going to top the spec sheets or styling list in, you know, there's no one area in which you'd say it's astounding. But it's just like a refined package that feels quite, you know, luxurious, really high quality in the build, and then I think there's loads of people who just buy them, you know.
Well, I was actually tempted. It was one of the ones I think I was really just between two bikes when I was changing the last time for the Africa Twin. It was between the Africa Twin and the R1250, I think, was what I was considering.
What, GS or
no the R. I wanted the road version of it, because obviously I know even with the Africa Twin, even though it can do it, I'm not going to take it off road, or at least not seriously.
Sure.
If not least because if you down it, you know, that's my daily commuter. So
yeah,
if I knacker it, then that's that's time sensible, off the bike, mate. And money.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah, exactly. So I'd rather do it with a borrowed bike on an experience day where obviously it's acceptable. But no, I was looking at the BMW, because it just looked like it ticked a lot of boxes, and I'd seen a few people commuting on them, but not many. And I couldn't really work out why, because it looks like a perfectly good option.
Yeah, I mean, on the naked bike, I guess the trade-off is like not having a windscreen and stuff, whereas your Africa Twin's going to keep you nice and cozy. But as a tool, and you know how good the GS is and how popular.
Yes.
But if you want the same engine, it's got so much torque and obviously everything's really nicely done, but maybe you just don't want the tallness and size of the GS, then the R's quite a nice option. The RS gets a little fairing and slightly clip-on-y looking bars, but they're quite high up, and so it's still pretty comfy. For me, that was the one. I loved it.
It looks like the sensible option. If you're going to go and do a bit of touring, you want the wind off you, but you want that kind of sporty bike, so when you get on the good roads, it feels sporty enough. Yeah, I'm glad it kind of lived up to the expectation.
Sticking a bit of luggage on that RS and sort of just using it for getting around for work things and doing a little bit of light touring. Yeah. Honestly, it'd be really, really good. And that's not to say they're not fun to ride, you know, on twisties and stuff. Because obviously when you're out in Spain, you get to do plenty of that sort of stuff to the point where you start getting a bit... Yeah.
You were like, in Almeria as well, right? You were the same place I was. Or were you not?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, Southern sorry. Spain. Wait, where did we fly into? Oh, mate, all these trips are merging into one. But yeah, we were down, we flew into Alicante and then got a transfer down to Almeria. So yeah,
right.
Great yeah. roads, incredible
Amazing,
roads.
Weren't they?
But you just kind of switch back after switch back to the point yes. where you're like almost getting spoiled and you're like, can we do something else?
Yeah, no, 100%. Like, it seems, it's complacent, isn't it? Because you're like, I would be crying out for this if I was back in London.
Yeah.
But yeah, you get on it and you're like, oh my God, my head is fried. I need to chill out for a second.
But yeah, it's quite engaging to ride in that way. It's very, you know, like I say, torquey. So driving out a corner yeah. is quite good. Got the quick shifter. It's got the electronic suspension that you can stick yeah. into dynamic mode. I would just say maybe like dynamic suspension on that bike and the dynamic riding mode with the throttle map, they're not like the same as if you got like a proper punchy bike. Like even the Hornet, which is a 90 horsepower $7,000 little bike, yeah, has yeah. a very aggressive throttle map in the sport mode, which means that in second gear it'll wheelie and all sorts. It's like a tiny little hooligan bike for not much money.
Yeah,
these bigger BMWs, you know, I think if you're looking for exhilaration, pure exhilaration, it's probably not going to deliver that. Even in dynamic, the throttle is quite gentle winding on, but it's done because it makes it a beautiful Yes. easy bike to ride.
Yeah.
Feels like high quality. So I kind of came away from it appreciating it for what it does. But I think it's definitely for a specific audience that's not looking for a Super Duke or something, you know? So
yeah.
Very good though. And then the second day was the S1000RR on the track.
That's what I thought I'd seen. Yeah.
Yeah. So I had to squeeze myself into those leathers that Revit kindly gave me. The other side of Christmas, and then all my track days have been this side of Christmas.
You look fantastic in it.
Thank you, mate.
You fill that out beautifully.
Black leathers hide a multitude of curves and undulations. But honestly, I look like, I was saying to my wife before I went out there, I was like, I'm pretty sure I look like a black pudding sort of squeezed into this. Pure black leathers with just some Revit in white. But anyway, it's all good. I could use that as a good excuse actually for my limited ability on track, that my leathers were too tight and I couldn't therefore hang off. But they're actually quite stretchy, so that's not but it was an amazing experience all the same. Like, I don't think I've ever ridden a 210 horsepower bike on track before, and it's quite fast. is the summary. Really enjoyed it. And everybody says as well, because I hadn't done that before, but everyone says yeah. about the S1000R, speaking to Maria Costello, who is like...
Yeah, she was there, right?
Yeah, she was there,
yeah. Yeah,
many accolades, extremely experienced. She was involved in some of the race testing out there. She was saying it's super easy bike to ride, because I was chatting to her the night before. You know, don't be intimidated by it. It's actually quite gentle and sort of flattering. And yeah. it was somewhat flattering. I could have done with perhaps a bit more flattery. I wasn't exactly, you know, setting lap records. But yeah, I think as a bike to go and experience, it's super easy to get on with.
Yeah.
You just have that feeling, though, that you're not exactly stressing it through the corners. But there's some long straights. There's one long back straight, so you can really nail it and feel what it can do. Get it into the upper rev. So that was quite the experience. They also had the F900R Cup bike. I don't know if, do you know about this? Have I told you about this?
I haven't seen that. No.
So British Superbike this year are, like, they have a sort of supporting race beforehand. And this year it's going to be BMW F900Rs only, which is a bike we reviewed together, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It was one of the early ones that we went out with.
Yeah, together, it was one of the first bikes we reviewed together. We had a Svartpillen 701. Or was it the Vitpillen? Whichever. Vitpillen.
It was the Vitpillen 701, yeah, and the F900 on the same day.
Yes. And on paper, the F900R, with all its fancy goodies and a bit more power, should have been the one that we came away from the day thinking, like, that was pretty awesome. But I think, especially myself, the simpler single cylinder, 70 horsepower, lightweight Husqvarna was the one that kind of floated my boat, and I was singing its praises, wasn't I, for ages afterwards?
Yeah.
And so I was thinking, oh my gosh, could it be any worse than a F900R? No, it's a brilliantly accomplished bike for the money, but I just think, like, as a race bike, maybe it's not that inspiring. But apparently, I was speaking to Al Fagan at 44 Teeth on a trip recently, they're entering. And he was saying, even just like a full system, that's one of the mods you can make, like a Arrow full system, just like incredible soundtrack, makes all the difference to feeling like that bike's actually, you know, exciting to ride. So there was the opportunity to do a few laps on that, but I was busy filming with the S1000RR. I had to get a video in the bag, so I didn't take it out. But a couple of the other people, Tim Rohde, I don't know if you know him, he went out on one. English biker Dan went out on one. And I think Lamb Chops went out on one as well. And they all came back saying it was really good fun. So that was quite interesting. Very loud. So, like I say, heck of a trip. Four bikes potentially, but I missed out on the F900R. But a rich and varied experience.
Yeah, no, it also sounded a little bit, you know, when we were talking about the CF Moto, having that many bikes to wrap your head around.
Yeah.
It's quite a lot in a short space of time. So it sounds similar kind of experience.
Totally. I mean, after riding the S1000RR on track, I was feeling pretty overwhelmed anyway, with like mentally there's a lot going on there. And then so to go and ride another bike, I was just like, nah, I think I'll just try and get something in the bag here. The other great side of it was they had like loads of incredible riders there as the lead riders. So some of these sort of Michael Rutter and Steve Plater, you know, they're kind of like, I'm trying to choose my words carefully, but the slightly older end of the spectrum, still incredibly capable though.
Yes, yeah.
But they also had Peter Hickman, you know, TT lap record holder.
I do know, Hickman,
leading our group. And he was just obviously kicking over.
That's so cool. Did you get to speak to him much as well or not?
We had like just a couple of minutes talking to him and asking him a few questions about like, I was more asking him like, what's the motivation for coming out and doing this? Like, is this not a waste of time sort of thing? But I think he seemed like he's enjoying himself, just a bit of, you know, chilled time.
Yeah. I think, does he ride a BMW? I think it's one of his in his stable.
I would imagine so, mate. Yeah. But yeah, you could also go out for one-on-one sessions. Like, so they took us out in groups of five and you followed one of these incredible experienced racers. But you could also do a one-on-one where they lead you around and give like actual tips. You could go pillion as well on an S1000XR with some of them. But I didn't have time for all this because I'm busy creator.
Yeah, man.
But on another, we were there with the BMW dealers. That's why they had all these cool experiences.
Makes sense. I was going to say, because otherwise you're like, everyone there surely has a job to do. And that's, you know, to record something good and to post stuff on social media, make a video out of it. So as much as it's great they've thrown that stuff on, I'm like, who the hell's going to get to experience that? But
yeah,
it makes sense if there's dealers there and stuff like that.
I think if you're doing on the bike stuff, right? Like if the majority of your content is GoPro with a mic in your helmet, then you could do a video where you rode the S1000RR on track, the F900R cut bike. You followed Peter Hickman around. You went on the back, you know, with Michael Rutter or something.
Yeah.
And then it would be a really interesting and exciting video to watch. But because my content focuses more on the bikes than the experience and it's more off the bike,
of course,
I couldn't really do so much of that stuff. So, but maybe next time, you know, hindsight, it's easy to spot the good video after the experience is gone.
Yeah.
Anyway, I thought today that leads us quite nicely onto our meteor topic. Beyond my sort of like travel and enjoyment, was thinking about the S1000RR and I was like,
yeah,
it's so much more capable than what I can do on track. But it did have me thinking it's a bit of a dream bike, especially in the M package, you know, with all the sort of red, white and blue paint and all the carbon bits hanging off it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I can see why, even if you can't ride this thing to the maximum of its capabilities, you'd still want to buy one, have it in the garage, look at it, take it out for a spin. I get that. I totally get it. So I thought, why don't we? I think we may have done this before on the podcast as well, but this is 2023 edition. Consider what our dream garage would be this year, given what's on the market. And we'll go by five categories. So I've given commuter as the first one. I'm kind of imagining some kind of lovely day out. If that makes sense to you, you start from your.
I don't know how your commute is, but yeah, that's not how I'd describe mine.
I'm thinking like you start in your mansion in Notting Hill, and you've got.
Oh, I see. Right. Okay. Yeah. For the full experience of all bikes,
you've got to commute out of the town to the services somewhere.
And swap your next one's waiting for you. Yeah.
Yeah. Number two, your touring bike, with which you go across the country to South Wales to some lovely gravel road through some forest.
Yeah.
Point number three, you swap onto your off-road or adventure bike.
Awesome.
Then you do a bit of road riding to get to a track, maybe Anglesey. So you road ride all the way up through Wales. What's that road called through Wales that you say is like banging literally all the way?
A470. Well, it's the one kind of road that links the whole south to north.
Exactly, mate. I knew you'd know. Up to Anglesey to do a track day or somewhere else, maybe a better track. Yeah. I don't know. But you get the idea. Mm-hmm. So I think you should go first because I've been...
Okay.
Wittering on for maybe a quarter of an hour now.
Well, here's the question. Do you want to alternate and describe our commuters?
We can't go all the way through because there's got to be some, I think there's going to be some mild debate here, isn't there?
I think so. Which one's better? Yeah, for sure.
And this is Dream Bikes, no budget. Don't think about the budget, mate. Just you're a millionaire. So
yeah, I know. Well, it's the thing is, if I was a millionaire, I'd still have, if it's a good bike, it's a good bike. It doesn't matter if it's great value for money as well. I'd still consider
it. That's why you're here, mate, because you're grounded and sensible and you don't get carried away with these thought experiments.
Oh, no, don't worry. There is, I've got ideas of how I would take it a little bit more extreme. For my commuter bike, I don't think it'll surprise you. Probably, and I have gone sensible. I've gone for the Royal Enfield Super Meteor 650.
I really
have, and that's because I do a lot of commuting, so I know what works really well as a commuter bike.
I did not see that coming, honestly. Nothing. I wouldn't have guessed that. Give me 20 guesses, I wouldn't have got that you were going to pick that.
Okay, I think you can probably work out why it sort of features in my list, I suppose, as a commuter bike, because there are other ones that I would definitely consider. And if I was going silly, and as a small caveat, I have silly options, mine was the Zero SRF. extreme
honestly,
of the spectrum.
There are all sorts of wild options out here, and I honestly wouldn't have picked either of those. But anyway, give me the rationale on the Enfield.
Okay, on the Enfield, the rationale being that I mean, you're never going to get out of like third gear anyway if you're doing commuting. You're just doing traffic lights, especially if you're doing it where I am. So you're just doing traffic light. You just need something that pulls away nicely from the lights and you can get under wing mirrors when you start drafting. And the fact that it's a lower bike, because you've got the Interceptor 650, that's a good choice as well, and that would be absolutely fine. But the Meteor, I would assume, as a sort of cruiser style, would be a little bit lower. So you could even give it some slightly lower bars if you wanted to. You can give it a sissy bar on the back if you want, which you can strap your backpack to. So you've got your...
I believe that phrase has been cancelled.
What? Oh, sissy bar?
Yeah, if you were being... All right. Yeah. If you're in 2023, you call it a passenger backrest.
Okay, yeah. You can...
I don't mind, though. I don't mind on that one.
Passenger backrest. and then you can put your luggage on there. So genuinely, it would be a really good choice because you borrowed the 350. It's 350, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think you'd agree that's probably a decent enough. I've tried that one actually as well. As a commuter bike, it's fine. But you'd want something with a little bit more guts to it.
Even in London, I did a Hunter 350 launch in London and it's fine, but it's not quite enough to feel maybe a little bit cheeky and fun. And I think the 650 would.
There's also a safety element actually to that, in that sometimes you just need to get out of the way of something. And if you haven't quite got the punch for it, because I remember when I had a little 250, this little Kawasaki thing, and it was great fun. But when you are like side onto a van or a truck or something, and you need to get around it for visibility's sake, you're like, I'm getting squeezed out here and it's a bit concerning. So
that's why I'm thinking of buying a Panigale, mate, because of safety.
Purely for safety, yeah.
Yeah.
You don't like my list? And then the other one, the SRF, the Zero. If we're going on the concept that I'm a millionaire, then I'm assuming I live in an apartment complex which also has underground parking and charging stations. So electric bike, job done.
I actually admire that choice, and I think like when I was in London, I did like run a couple of finance quotes for the SRF because it is like, it's still fun. Like you could go and do some fun stuff with that. But as a commuter, it makes total sense. It'd be so much fun to ride that around town.
Yeah.
I can't disagree with the logic on the Super Meteor as well. It was just a surprise because you had a cruiser with the V9 Bobber.
Yeah, which was a great little commute. That was actually one of my favorite commuters because I gave that... No, it did have drop bars on it, so really flat bars.
Mm.
And that thing just skidded underneath wing mirrors easy without touching them. Whereas, you know, any other bike has a kind of... There's a point that, you know, the Africa Twin, for example, it's quite high barred. So yes, it's vans that screw that one up, whereas a Cafe Racer doesn't get screwed up by vans, it's cars. But the V9 was even below that. So it sort of got away with, some cheeky maneuvers.
Yeah, I get you. That makes sense. But why did you get rid of the V9 then? Was it not the cruisiness?
It was, but that was because my next category. This is a category where I have I can tick the boxes for touring and adventure riding and stuff.
Well, let's get onto that in a moment before you get carried away. But I will say I admire your choices and bravery to go for something that I did not expect. Super Meteor, I'm getting one in first week of May. Maybe you can come and give it a little ride.
Yeah,
while I've got it, that'd be quite fun to do a day out. I have to think of something to compare it to, though, like maybe V9. The Inceptor or the V9. Yeah, if we can get hold of one, they're quite rare.
Yeah,
in this country, but underrated, I'd say. Right, my choice for commuter, I went for, and I thought about this quite a lot last night. T120, because it's one of the Bonnevilles that I think maybe gets overlooked because it was one of the first that gets launched, but it's actually brilliant. Like it's very powerful, but it's not as sporty as like a Thruxton or Speed Twin, which means it's like a lot more comfortable. It's cushy. The saddle's like padded. Mm. The bar position is lovely. And then it's not as tall as like the Scramblers, which I think look really cool, but realistically, like a T120 around town, two up, it's great as well. Like everything about that bike is excellent, and there's a reason they haven't changed it much, is because it's just really great. But then I was thinking, is that a little bit boring for a dream bike choice, and does it look gangster enough for, you know, showing off outside your office or your fancy house? And so then I decided I would probably get it customized tastefully, I may add, by Thornton 100. I think a Thornton 100 customized T120 would be an absolute beast. And they do the kind of crazy customs, don't they? Like the supercharged bobbers and stuff. But there's also stuff when you look at their Instagram feed and things like that, where they do it in a way that's a little bit more stealth, and it's just about adding like nice bits, and they do those incredible Pika exhaust systems that are rooted in really weird ways.
Yeah.
Love all that stuff, mate. And so I think that would be my choice. In fact, one of my favorite things they do is they make a bar clamp for the retro Triumphs that's kind of machined to their own design, and it's got an integrated mount for either quad lock or Beeline Moto.
Yeah.
Straight into the bar clamp. Lovely stuff. All those little touches are what would make it nice. Yeah. So that'd be my pick. Any issue with that?
No issue. It's a sensible option, I would say, that one. Yeah, because it's the right kind of bike for that. The reason I wouldn't go, or I was trying to go sort of like more specific, is because you can be quite specific when you don't need a bike that does everything. So if you can have like five bikes, then you can get real like specific and specialized with the bike that you're choosing. Where that one, I love the T120. I love Bonneville in general, but the T120 is the one that I probably would look at because it's the comfortable kind of middle ground. It does everything that you would need it to, because you can go and do a longer trip on it and have fun. You can customize it and make it. They do look really good. Down and Out actually do some really good customs as well.
Yes.
They were ones that I saw a lot of at the bike shed. And their stuff's really, really neat. And they do little packs, actually. So you can buy like an inspiration kit, or they did do at the time, where you can take some of the stuff you like from them. Good choice.
I say what, like, I'm thinking now just after, you know, mulling it over is like, I do admire your dedication to like the art of filtering. And, and that's something I used to get a lot on my channel when I was riding in London uploading my videos from my Street Twin. I'd taken the regular mirrors off, of course, and I didn't even put bar ends on because they do limit how you can just squeeze under stuff. And it takes like 10 minutes off your commute just being able to dip under stuff. So
yeah, pretty much.
The T120 is an all-rounder, but yeah, you're right. The low-slung bike almost always will win in a sort of race across town. So fair play, mate. I like that. Right, number two. You've got out of town. You're at, I don't know what service is. What's that one on the M4?
I don't do the M4 very often.
Really?
I avoid it if
I'm always on the M4.
Well, yeah, that's your main exit, isn't it?
I think I'm gonna have to Google it because it's a funny name. I don't know what's so funny about it. Not Membury, not Lee, not Reading. It's sort of really close towards town. I'm gonna get it for you. I'm almost there.
The bag shop.
Heston.
Heston.
I don't know why it's funny. It just makes me think of Heston Blumenthal. Anyway, no. You've got to you meet Heston Blumenthal at Heston, yes, Services, and he's holding the keys for your next motorcycle, which will be number two, the Tourer, which is going to get, yeah, you to somewhere more remote for some. So you're just going to blast all the way down the M4 to like Cardiff.
Got you. What I love about this is that Heston Blumenthal has got to ride my Meteor back into London for me.
Yeah. So
he's going to have a great day. but I am swapping over to my Tiger 1200 GT Explorer, fully kitted. I want all the panniers on it. I want the top box on it with the backrest. I haven't got a pillion with me, but if they were with me, they'd be really comfortable. It's got, you know, my cruise control, my heated seats, my heated grips. It's got my radar.
It works.
Yeah, everything. Kit that thing out.
And that's the 30-litre tank, isn't it, on the Explorer?
Yes. Yeah,
so you probably wouldn't need to stop even to come back again.
Just blasting straight through. Yeah, I could get all the way up to North Wales probably with that thing.
Probably. I would imagine so. If you were very tender with your throttle application, you might even get there. First question here about this one is, the only downside of that bike with the T-plane crank is that it vibes a bit. Do you think you could withstand the vibes in the saddle and pegs and bars, or do you see that as a positive, a tingle in the saddle for a long boring ride on the motorway?
That was going to be my answer. Was is it a negative, or is it actually, does it enhance the experience? To be honest, I didn't notice it too badly because we did a full day of riding with it. We did a lot of miles, or a fair amount of miles in one day on those bikes. And that's the one I kept going back to as well, of all of them. And I really didn't think that because it's bigger and it's heavier. And I thought it was going to be more interested in the smaller, nippier, lighter ones, but absolutely loved it. And I think I said at the time as well, the added weight as well sort of helps it feel a bit more planted.
Yeah,
just a bit softer on the road, I suppose, in a sense. But I think also possibly would take out some of the vibrations over the lighter versions if you just went for like the GT or something.
Maybe, the sort of weightiness. I'm sure you could, you know, put some foam grips on and some extra rubber in the pegs and a comfort seat. I didn't find it too bad either. We did a day that the day you were referring to was when we had four of the Tiger 1200 models. So not the base model, but we had the GT Rally, GT Explorer, Rally Explorer. Yeah. And I will say, like, even after doing the launch for those bikes out in Spain or Portugal or whatever, I liked it then, but I think riding it in the UK just for getting around on the road and doing a bit of motorway, I thought it was really good as well. So I can see why it'd be a good choice. And I even did a little back-to-back with the Rally Explorer and a GS up at Superbike Factory. Mm. And while the GS, you know, it's excellent, there's no denying that. And the Boxer Twin's really smooth on the motorway, and it's got that telelever front suspension that gives it a lot of comfort and that planted feel. I still came away feeling like the Tiger was a bit more exciting because it's got a bit of a growl to it, and the front end feels a bit more direct as well. So, I like that. That's a good choice, mate, apart from the vibes. But yeah, if you flip that as a positive, if you're into that sort of thing, then it's a solid choice.
Exactly. And yours?
Goldwing Tour every day, all day, any decent amount of mileage. You know, I've ridden some really beautiful large touring motorcycles. Like I was thinking back to the Indian, not the Challenger. It's got a different Pursuit. It's the Challenger, but with a full luggage and top box in sort of like touring spec.
Yeah.
And it's got the big V-twin and it's got the works. And from a sort of bling perspective, it just looks phenomenal. But I don't think I've ever ridden anything as smooth and comfortable as a Goldwing. Apart from I've never ridden a K1600, but I suspect the six-cylinder engine layout is what is doing it for me.
Yeah.
And the fact that the Goldwing is flat and has that sort of Porsche sound just makes it pretty amazing. So that'd be my choice for just doing the big miles. Two slight drawbacks on that bike is, like, number one, they shrunk the luggage a little bit since the previous generation. I mean, the previous gen Goldwing was huge. Like, it looks like a truck.
That's the one we took out, yeah?
Nah, the one before that.
Oh, okay.
It had bigger luggage, and but it was such a big bike and it was quite weighty. Whereas they shrunk it down a little bit, found areas where they could make it a little bit more lean. But maybe there's a little bit of a compromise. But if you don't take a passenger, you can strap stuff to the passenger seat. And also, you see, you can get those little like racks on top of the top box on some big touring bikes. Maybe you can strap some stuff up there. But the other thing as well, it's got an electronically adjustable windscreen. And the more up it gets, the more it's just cutting in here. And I get like a lot of buffer in.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe there's a deflector or a different screen that's just going to give me full coverage. And I'm not exactly tall. I think we can all admit and agree that that is the case.
Pretty average height, yeah.
So maybe it'd be beneficial to be in a much taller rider where your head is just in the wind. Or maybe if you're very small, you'd be like cocooned.
We've had this
there.
Debate loads over any bike that's got a screen on it. We're sort of like, no, nah, not the sweet spot. It's not there. Yeah.
That's it, mate. On this podcast, we discuss the issues that really matter. And the sweet spot of windscreens is...
very nuanced topic is what it is.
It is. It's got depth. It's got... controversy, you know, it's got everything really. So I think that is just one thing I'd want to sort on it, but I think from every other perspective it's really the nuts for me. And I'd go DCT as well, just for that. Like, why I don't see why you need gear shifts when you're just plodding along. It's the one bike that DCT massively suits. So we've got to probably, I've got to admit, actually, what's the Welsh word for, you'll know, the Welsh word for services?
I'll know. Thanks. They're going to take my Welsh credibility away from me. No, I actually don't know what the word for
Well, I was saying, we get to the M4. Maybe. We're near Cardiff services.
We don't have services. We just have petrol stations.
it's something like, I do not know how to pronounce this. It's like Gwasanaethau.
Hold on. I what I can do is pronounce Welsh words. I can actually do that.
I'll paste it into the chat for you.
Gwasanaethau.
Anyway, well, my point was, like, when I get, like, when we moved to Bristol, and I hadn't really been to South Wales that much, but then I started reviewing bikes out in South Wales. So I go on the over the bridge onto the M4, and then stay on there for whatever amount of time before I find somewhere to come off that's scenic, whatever location that's got for that day. But I'd always see this sign for Gwasana. What do you say?
It's Gwasanaethau.
Gwasanaethau. I see the sign a lot for that. I just think, like, how are there still signs for this town, even though I'm like an hour away now? Yeah. And yet I've never heard of it. Cardiff, totally understand why there's a sign like 2 hours back down the road saying Cardiff is this way. Newport, Swansea, we've all heard of those. But this place, Gwasanaethau, I was just like, where is it? And then I went home and Googled it and realized it was just services. So anyway, you're at the Gwasanaethau at Cardiff and you're swapping onto some kind of like off-roady fun bike to go and do some gravel and whatnot. You've been going first, so let's... I kind of feel like I know what you're going to say here.
Oh, do you? I'm interested to see whether or not we're saying the same bike because we haven't doubled up yet. Which, if we go the whole way and we haven't, then that's impressive. No, maybe you won't know what I'm going for. I'm going to go for a little thing called a Husqvarna Norden 901.
Oh! I thought you were just going to go for the Africa Twin.
Yeah, nah.
That's madness.
I love the Africa Twin. It is, and I've probably said it to you, I've said it to everyone, it's probably the best bike that I've owned, if not one of. And it's like, it's not so specific at all because it just sort of lends itself to most things aside from going on a track.
Yeah.
Any other kind of riding experience you're doing, and probably, I guess, arguably commuting, you can find better, but it's not too bad at it. So it's a great bike. I love it. But if I was being honest, the one that excites me more, and I am a millionaire, let's be fair, although it's not that expensive, is the Norden 901. And I know they've just got the Expedition.
Looks quite good, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's quite nice. I actually don't know what the main sort of differences are between the two.
Do you want me to tell you?
Yeah, please do.
It's got taller suspension.
Okay.
A bigger windscreen.
Yeah.
And some luggage, soft luggage, or at least the racks. Yes. And I think there's some other minor differences, but the big one is like the tall suspension means I think the idea is you can just go on gravel trails and just tank it along, you know, and it'll soak everything up.
Yes. So, I mean, like, if you're an accomplished off-road rider, then that's probably what you want. For if you're an average rider like myself, then you possibly want the standard one with the lower suspension because you might feel a little bit less intimidated by it. And especially, obviously, if you stop and put your foot down and just sort of get it wrong, then the weight arrives very quickly, doesn't it, when you start to sort of lean it over.
Totally.
But no, it's a great bike. It's actually perfectly well suited, as you found as well, to the road. It's such a good do-everything bike, even possibly more than the Africa Twin, I would say. It's sort of, if it's not so specialized where it's just like dedicated for off-road, and it's not so specialized that it's dedicated for road riding.
What about is it partly the looks as well that would mean you wouldn't go for the KTM, like the 890?
Oh, it's 100% okay. The looks that I wouldn't go, because otherwise, if Logic was buying this bike, then yeah, I would go for the KTM. For sure, because it's got the lower weight, right? With the fuel tank, it sort of helps it feel
a bit
easier to manage. Yeah,
yeah, that is actually solid. I hadn't actually thought of that. And those are some of the best off-road adventure bikes, I would say. A lot of people saying the Desert X is really, really good, but I haven't taken it off-road yet. No,
I can't change my vote now.
You can't. Norden 890, that sort of bike, really good.
Yeah,
the one I went for, maybe I would change to the Desert X actually. But anyway, the one that I was thinking of recently was, like, just from first-hand experience, if I have to say, like, what's the best adventure bike that I've ever ridden off-road, like, easily, the Tenere 700 World Raid. So the Tenere 700 is decent, but, you know, it's all built to a price. The World Raid gets this big fuel tank and then this much improved suspension.
Yeah.
And like, it's rare that you actually get to back-to-back bikes on an adventure day. Normally they've just got a fleet of the same bike, but having the ability to ride those two back to back, the pronounced difference in the suspension was just like such a game changer, and the way that you were willing to just push it that little bit harder. But honestly, like, I didn't really feel like I had a need for a bigger fuel tank. I was just like, I get it for the right kind of application. But for me, I was just like, I would only do kind of relatively short haul stuff. So I don't really need that. Not that it's necessarily a drawback. I mean, you're always happy with a bigger tank. But anyway, just recently, they've announced in France, Germany, and Spain, maybe, or just a few few European countries, a new, I think it's called the Extreme Edition of the Tenere 700. Yeah, Tenere 700 Extreme. And effectively, it's like, I don't want to say parts being special, but it's like, it's a standard Tenere, but just with like some choice upgrades. And one of those is the suspension from the World Raid. So it kind of fits somewhere in between. It's got the quality of the suspension, but without the extra price and weight of that, you know, extra big fuel tank. So I haven't ridden it, but what I'm saying is, like, having ridden the Tenere and the World Raid, the thing that fits in the middle would be the Extreme, and I think it's going to be pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And so that's probably what I'd choose, although it doesn't feel massively dream bikey. Maybe I'd get stuck into the accessories catalog and get it painted all funny and whatever, just to make it a bit more bling. But it does look awesome.
It's a good choice. It's a solid choice. I'm going to allow it. Especially if you're sort of considering the Desert X, I think you've actually probably made the right choice. Because, like, if we're going off-road and we're talking specialist tool, then the Tenere is renowned for being one of the best choices you can go for if you want an off-road bike.
The only massive drawback of this one, the Extreme Edition, because it's got the rally seat on it and the suspension. Can you hazard a guess, Tim? I love to make you guess stuff on the podcast. At the seat height of the Tenere 700 Extreme Edition.
If I can, guess the seat height?
Yeah, well, what's your Africa Twin?
830? 850? Yeah, I think 850 probably. Depends, because I've got the low seat and the high seat. I think probably 850. 850 is a sort of average height for an off-road bike, I think. An adventure bike is like 850 is sort of a normal height. I don't know. I hope it's not more than 900.
You've got a guess. Just put a number.
All right, 910. 910.
Are you actually kidding though, or no?
No,
did you just Google it?
No, I'm guessing.
Are you serious?
Is it 910? Is it bang on 910? Because I was going to go 9, and then I thought, nah, you know what? Go a little off.
The whole point of you guessing stuff is
was
to
I get it wrong
drag the podcast out for another quarter of an hour.
On a seat height.
Yeah. Give the people what they want. The extremely engaging content where you're just saying numbers and I'm just saying warmer. No, anyway, you've killed that segment dead because it is 910 mil in the sea.
That was me guessing, like, I still wouldn't want it to be that because
you knew it was like going to be something silly, didn't you? Because I wouldn't make you guess
exactly.
Something.
Yeah. We're both very average height And that's the sort of height where I'd be like, not my bike.
I'm a little bit shorter than you, definitely. So I think I might struggle. Although you can learn to ride a bike tall as that. But there's going to be times off-road where you like park it up somewhere and then you're like, oh, fuck, I can't get it off the stand. Or, you know, like really struggling with it. But yeah, 9, 10 mil. I think I'd probably need some like Cuban boots. Adventure boots with just like...
Yeah.
Or a step. Like when someone's getting on a horse.
Exactly, yeah.
Get their little stable boy to bring the step out. Are you busy this weekend, Tim?
I'll be your stable boy, yeah, it's fine.
Okay, well, I think we've covered the details on that one then.
Yeah, for sure.
Next up, you park it up. Another celebrity chef is probably going to hose it down for you. I don't know why. And hand over the keys for a road bike with which you're going to propel yourself at alarming speeds towards the nearest track, down some good Welsh twisties, let's say.
Yeah, yeah.
What are you thinking?
Well, on this one, I actually fully committed to the principle that I am a millionaire and let's achieve something unachievable. So I've gone for the... I've gone for the Arch Method 143.
What? I know exactly what that is, kind of. I know like what Arch is. That's Keanu Reeves.
It is. Yeah. And that's part of the reason. Maybe I'll be friends with Keanu Reeves. Maybe he drops it off. Maybe he's the one hosing down my adventure bike.
Yeah, that perfect. I didn't know until now. That would have made more sense. But
for sure.
The Arch Method 143. Is that it? That's the entire name?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Arch is that 143 cubic inch engine, I assume, then? That's how American cruisers label themselves, isn't it?
I don't know really. Well, I don't know what they've sort of chosen it for. So I actually know surprisingly little about this specific bike. I just know there are others. We had a few of them in the bike shop when I was there. Or one of them, I think, actually, we had there. And what I loved about it is that it was like twice the size of a normal bike. It was ludicrous. It was that kind of American thing. Like when really you see an American muscle car, it's just like, they don't look that big on film. And then you see it compared to a European hatchback and you go, my God, how do you fit that on the roads? And it's a similar kind of thing with the bike, obviously, but it's smaller than a car. So it's only just, but so it's easier to fit on the roads anyway. But it is 2,343 cc's of displacement.
That is indeed 143 cubic inches. That's how they like to name their bikes, stick a cubic inch thing on the end. But that is massive. I mean, that's almost Triumph Rocket 3.
Exactly. It's also 151 foot-pounds of torque, which is Triumph Rocket territory as well.
And the dry weight is 532 pounds, which is what in kilograms? Let's have a look. 241? That's like a whole person less than a rocket. That must be a beast.
Yeah. Exactly. What a bike. So yeah, why not? Why wouldn't I go for that? It's also, I believe, roughly starts at $85,000.
So not anytime soon. Do they do finance? Do they do PCP?
Yeah,
what's
entire
the minimum
life.
Deposit?
exactly. Yeah. The balloon payment would be astonishing. So,
you know what? I was thinking about this, like as soon as you said it, obviously, I Googled it. I'm on the Arch website looking at it. I've got to say, it's a very striking looking motorcycle. And for the gentleman millionaire to have something that stands out from the crowd to make sure that your status as, you know, somebody in the upper echelons is clear for all to see, you do probably need something a bit visually striking like this. Mm-hmm. So fair play to you. You've gone for something that definitely is... you know, it's a notch above an MT07. And I was kind of ready to find a problem with it, as is, I suppose, part of the, you know, content format, I suppose, if you're going to suggest something, we've got to scrutinize that. But it does look really quite good. It's like super torquey, probably drinks fuel. It's quite light, given the style of bike and given how long it is. And I was even thinking, well, if you're going to go on twisty roads, it's going to be long, it's not going to turn, and also you're going to be scraping the pegs everywhere. But looking at the photos on their website, it's got like rear sets on it.
Yeah.
So it looks quite sporty.
Yeah, it's quite different, because I know even with the first generation of Arch or the sort of development of it, the whole point when you hear Keanu Reeves talk about it is that he loves a cruiser style, but he didn't want it to handle like a cruiser. He didn't want it to be like a Harley. He wants it to actually be able to get down when you get on the twistier roads. So even with the earlier Arch motorcycles, I believe for a cruiser, they handled quite well. And it's similar to the Diavel kind of principle, right? Where it doesn't really fit into any category, and especially with this one, because of all of their bikes, this is the one that looks the sportiest. So presumably it's the one that can handle the best out of all of their fleet.
You've really done a great job there of choosing something spectacular. And I haven't.
Go on then, what's yours?
I just said 890 G car. It's hands down the best road bike you can buy. Naked road bike. God, very boring. Maybe if now in the context of what you said, the other thing that does that I do quite like the look of was the Lamborghini edition of not the Street Fighter, but the Diavel. Do you see that?
No, I haven't seen that actually. So like a collab type thing.
Diavel, yeah. It was like 60 grand, but it's in sort of like a military green, but with a bit of metallic in it. And then it had gold wheels, and the wheels were built to match like the Lamborghini. I think if I was trying to show off and still buy something that's an absolute weapon, then that might be it actually. But honestly, if I was thinking not necessarily like, how do I buy something to show off? But actually just if money was no object, but I just wanted to go and have a really good time riding on the road today.
Yeah.
I'd probably go 890 G car.
And that, you know what?
Greeted with silence.
You'd be faster on the road than me. I'm still just pining after the arch, if I'm being honest.
Who knows? In a straight line, you'll probably do me, won't you?
A theory. Yeah. Well, yeah, in a straight line, I would. But as soon as you get to the corners, you have to imagine that you would be much more agile, because that really is, that is a very agile bike.
Yes.
And you're talking like it plays well with stuff like the Street Triple, which is also a very agile bike. But of the two of them, I would actually say probably the KTM is the,
it's got the grunt
flightier one, I suppose. Yeah, it's also just sharper to handle, and it's all of the rider aids. I don't know whether you can sort of acutely feel them when you're riding, but maybe it's just the fact that you know that they're there. It just feels like the kind of bike where whatever's around that corner, if you've not prepared for it, you have the best chance of kind of adapting on that bike.
Yeah.
Over any other, almost any other bike that I've ridden, especially the same sort of style. It's a good choice. It's a very, very good bike, but it feels achievable. That feels like the kind of bike that I actually could buy myself.
This is what I really like about you, Tim, is I feel like you did a good minute there of trying to repair what is clearly quite an underwhelming choice for me. And that's the sign of a good friend.
You get onto the track bikes and I'll make up for it, because mine is very boring when it comes to the track.
Go on then. We've made it to, I don't know, I said Anglesey, I don't know, anywhere,
Anglesey.
Somewhere.
Yeah, we've gone to Anglesey Circuit. I've not ridden it, but I don't think it's, I don't know, considered a particularly exciting track.
I think it's pretty good. I don't know. Looks over the sea as well. Quite spectacular.
What I would say is it's very windy and rainy, so picky seasons. If I'm going on track now, I've gone very sensible, and the reason I've gone sensible is based off the sort of the trip that I did on the CF Moto, and the fact that one of the bikes I enjoyed the most was the little capacity sports bike, right? It's not the bike I've chosen, just to sort of get that in there, so it's not that concerning, but it told me that I wouldn't necessarily have the best time on a liter bike with like all of the best performance you can find, because ultimately I think the bike is going to outdo me on the track. Whereas if I went for the likes of a Yamaha R7, I feel like I could get a hold of that bike, and I feel like it's the kind of bike I could learn on and improve my skills, rather than just get on and go, what an amazing bike, but I'm crap.
I've got to wholeheartedly agree. Like on the S1000RR, I was just like, this is amazing, incredible, fast bike. But I didn't really feel like I was learning a great deal.
I'm not Peter Hickman, so I can't go around a track like that. And I'm never going to be Peter Hickman. So for me, I want to go for a smaller bike that I actually feel like I could improve on.
I think probably the most I developed on the track was riding the Ninja 650 at Superbike School, California Superbike School. But that bike doesn't really allow you to get into like a good sporty position. So you start, after a couple of days, you're like, oh, I wish I was, you know, riding a bit more aggressively. Yeah, so that's where the R7 comes in as a great choice. It's not dream bike territory though, is it?
Nah. Do you want a dream bike? Panigale V4R. That's 39 grand. That's my dream bike option. If you want something a bit more interesting, but I know for sure I'd get on that bike and be slower on that probably than I would be on the R7 and be holding up the rest of the pack.
Possibly, or at least you'd feeling a bit timid as well probably about riding it. I think that the ideal is you show up at the circuit with a trailer with two bikes in, and the Panigale V4R is the one that you're polishing in the pits and like checking the tire pressures, and you've got your Ducati leathers on, and then when it's go time.
Well, I was going to say I give my leathers and helmet to somebody else who's
somebody
with me.
Good. And then you go round the back of the pits and get your leathers and helmet on so no one can tell it's you, and just roll out onto the circuit on your R7 and try and learn something. Funny that you said that, because my first instinct was almost something like the R7, and then having ridden the Aprilia RS660 recently, it's a brilliant road bike, and I feel like probably for my ability level I'd have a lot of fun on the track on the RS660.
So
I was like, solid, like it's such a great bike, I really enjoyed it, it's great, love everything about it. And then I did get that same feeling of like, is a sub 10 grand sports bike really pushing the boundaries of this? What dream bike would you have? It's sort of like the 890. It's like, what bike would I choose to go and have a good time today? Probably that. And I think we'd have a great little time on the R7 and RS660. But then I did think, well, what would I really, really want? And I think
so what's your avatar going around on the track on instead of you?
Well, I've never been massively into sports bikes. The Panigales are obviously, they've got a certain je ne sais quoi. I'd say also the Aprilia RSV4 looks incredible. Mm-hmm. But one sports bike that always just sticks with me, and it's not necessarily the most recent and massively developed, is just the R1. Purely for the cross-plane crank and the way it sounds. I remember when I lived in London, we lived next to Blackheath Hill, which is sort of going out to the sticks where people would set off on their bikes on a Sunday. And like, you could always tell when it was an R1 with a tasty set of pipes on it sailing up there, because it just sounds amazing. So just for the sound, and I'm sure it's fantastic anyway and all that stuff. Maybe that. But for sensible old Bob with his good friend Tim.
Yeah.
Just going out for a nice...
Do you know what though? That sounds like the perfect day or experience. It's just like two people dressed as us going round on an R1 and a Panigale V4, and then me and you at the back. No one knows we're there. We're just having our own day. You're on the RS660 and I'm on the... Yeah.
It'd be lovely,
on the R7.
It?
It'd be so good. And they would be really well sort of matched to each other, because they are similarly sporty, similar sort of power, similar sort of size, weight, everything like that. I think we'd have an absolutely fantastic day.
They can take my timing chip and take my GoPro and everything like that, you know. Just so we've got some evidence afterwards that it was me / well, it's not evidence, is it? It's sort of fakery. But anyway, we that concludes our fantastical dream day out on a bike. It'd be quite a long day, is only the only thing I was thinking, to commute out of London, then hit the M4, then do a bit of gravel riding, then get to the top of Wales, and then do a track day. It might have to be a stop off somewhere at a lovely pub in the middle of the Breckens. So that'd be nice. But otherwise, I think you've done a good job there, Tim. Lovely choices, some sensible stuff.
Yeah, exactly. A mix of sensible and silly.
Bit of everything.
That's the best way.
As always, you know, we'd love to hear what people think of the episode in the Full Tank Motorcycle Podcast group. If you go Facebook and search for Full Tank Motorcycle Podcast, it's a private group, but we let everyone in. We just occasionally boot people out for spamming. But, you know, post up in there. Let me know what you'd pick. We'd love to hear some of your thoughts and ideas and critiques, maybe, of our own selections are also welcome, as long as they are respectful and constructive. Next up will be on the launches. So we've got Scrambler week next week, CL for me, Ducati for you. I'm still totally fine with it.
You sound it,
so we'll probably be back the week after with a bit of a wrap up of how those trips went. Hope everyone's well, and we'll see you next time.
Bye bye.